Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Damon Lindelof did nothing wrong.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Don't poke the bear, Brian.
Get in my kitchen. You're not allowed. No kitchen. That's the embroidered sign I'm putting up.
Brian, I'm going to go look through the IMDb here. I like World War Z.
Okay. All right. Except for Prometheus, Damon Lindelof did nothing wrong.
And Tomorrowland in the last several seasons of Lost. Other than that, no Cowboys versus Aliens. But other than that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know if that'll end up being a whole After Things episode or not, but in the pre-show, we were talking about the new Watchmen, and I didn't expect it to be as polarizing as it has been. It's really interesting. Here on the podcast, Justin did not have a good time. I did have a good time. Andrew refused to even watch it.
Don't distill. I have very complicated feelings that I resolved to not make a big deal about.
Okay, all right. We'll put a pin in it.
My position is I'm waiting to hear what other people say. I'm waiting. I'm like, there's a lot of great stuff out there. And, you know, I love that source material. So I'll wait to see what other people are like. Ah, that's great. I'm like, okay, I'll go run and go. And I've had that happen where I've had people like, there have been shows. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to go see it. And then it's great. And also I'm like, wow, this was amazing. You know? And so
talked on the show. Wasn't Gravity one of those that like, it didn't take the first time you watched it, but the second time you liked it more?
Oh, Potter, like the first, like this is a children's book, you know, and finally, so I'm one of these people that like, if I'm like, I don't, that Kool-Aid looks gross, you know, and then they're like, no, it's really good Kool-Aid, like, that looks gross, and like, I don't like the taste of it, and like, no, just drink it all, and then I'll be like, oh, wow, this is amazing Kool-Aid, so we'll see.
It is one of my favorite ongoing segments is the, at various moments, each of us are the latest to get into a trend, like often years behind everybody else.
Oh. Yeah. I'm embarrassed. my girlfriend and I just started watching Community.
Oh!
So it's just like, yeah, ding, ding. Listen, let's change the tone here. I want you to imagine that you're a parent. Okay.
All right. Trying real hard to imagine this.
Yeah, I know. You're a caring parent. And
okay, all right. Stretching it. Got it. All right.
You go tuck the baby away in his crib, put the baby away, say goodnight. Now you feel good because you've got a baby camera on there to watch your child.
That's
you
what know. We call them, baby cameras. Yes.
Yep. You shut the door, close, walk down the hall, you sit down and maybe make yourself a cup of cocoa or whatever like this. And it's maybe a little bit, you know, creepy night, a little bit of a wind, and the house is dark, and you're alone, nobody else is home, just you and the baby. And you take a sip, you set the coffee cup down, and you're starting to feel tired. And you're like, oh, let me check on the baby. And you pull open your app to go have a peek to see how the baby's doing. And then you see this.
Okay. I see. Looks like three screenshots. It's just the baby. Wait. Okay. It looks in the center frame like the baby is holding a doll that suddenly has become animated and has a horrified screaming face. Am I the only one seeing this?
What? No. Yeah, I would assume doll is a good guess. It looks to me like it's just a screaming ghost baby. Like, but yes, from that, if I were then to try to rationalize it as something that wasn't a screaming ghost baby, I would agree with your doll theory.
But even then, like as a doll, they don't traditionally make dolls with horrified screaming expressions on them.
So you're back on my side with screaming ghost baby, eh?
Yes.
So now your heart's racing, thump, 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 thump. And you've got to go maybe up the stairs. You've got a long ways to go to get there. Your brain is trying to figure out, what am I seeing? My child doesn't have a screaming ghost baby doll. I only have one child.
Can we table the fact that we got a great marketing opportunity? But we can get to that after we're done here. But yeah, all right. No, this is terrifying. Terrifying.
Also, I've definitely already posted this photo on Reddit, and I'm already seeking that karma before I go upstairs. Like, I'm about to go inspect my daughter's crib, and this is what I think is there.
But I'll stop and answer questions for more karma.
AMA.
Brian's at the landing between the steps, stops his phone, checks to see to answer anything.
It really does look like a freaking crazy ghost baby.
I mean, so in all seriousness, what I would look at that and say, okay, how do I rationalize this? I would guess you're looking at just, this is like a noise, right? This is something is pinched and folded in a way that is just our brain is making it look between the shadows or whatever. Like, it's just making it look, because it does, like, to get that face, that screaming ghost baby face, you don't really need a lot, right? You just need a curve, two dots, and a horrifying mouth screaming about the afterlife and all the sins.
Well, but you're right. After below that is all of, you know, like some kind of Fiji mermaid fold of blanket, such that you see what looks like feet down at the bottom of it, a midsection in the middle. What is that face? Look, Andrew, I have to know what is going on. Why am I looking at a screaming ghost baby?
You have to know. I know. And you're about to open up the door. And now you're thinking, if it's a demon, you got to prepare. But demons aren't real. But what am I seeing?
Well, okay. If my extensive research in The Good Place has taught me anything, it's that the demon almost certainly is going to be super ripped and attractive. So I start to steal my own sense of self-esteem before I go in.
Because you're afraid that the demon baby in your child's crib might be more muscular than you are.
Yes, I'm glad we're on the same page. Okay, yes.
Or a 6,000-foot tall squid.
Yeah.
Yes. Either or.
About that for Brian is that it is the most realistic look into the psyche of Brian Brushwood that you could possibly ask for.
I'm afraid I'm going to have a pose down with a demon.
I'm afraid, look, I got, it's not that I'm going to face this demon. I'm here for the demon. I'm just really hoping it's paunchy. Because let's be honest, I haven't hit the gym in the same way that I wanted to. There's just been a lot going on with the property.
I'm just thinking, like, as I open that door, I'm like, come on, girl demon, girl demon, girl demon. Let's go, let's go.
any other theories? Any other theories?
I mean, could it be? Oh,
can I see the picture one more time, Bryce? Because I got to tell you, normally I'm pretty big on the humans see faces where faces don't exist. That would really. This is not like a face on Mars thing. This is like, that seems to be a painting. Either that kid is like the Picasso of poop on his sheets. But I mean, like, that's very clearly a face.
I mean, it would probably, not to quibble, but more impressionistic. Maybe like an early Degas.
Little Monet action.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. The only other thing that I could think of is maybe if there was some kind of, like a fast food like plastic thing that would go on top of a fountain drink or whatever. There's like just some other little thing that just in the shadow of the light looks different.
Bryce, do you have the actual image?
We do. Let's load it up here. This is from the sun.com.
Right, so I walk in, I open the door, and you hear me muttering under my breath, girl demon, girl demon, good one, girl demon. I flip on the light switch, and what do I see? Oh, God damn it.
It is a mattress sticker on the crib's mattress of a baby, and the sheet is pulled back.
So was this a case of like an infrared camera was seeing through the sheets or something?
Oh, no. The sheet was pulled back.
Got it. Okay, so exposing.
licking a baby's face. That the reason why that baby's face was so amazing was because it was indeed shooting a baby's face.
Oh, that was a really good one, guys. That was a really good one.
I saw that photo and I'm like, I've got no idea what this is. And I'm waiting to just scroll down the article. I'm like, cause it mentioned like her, cause the headlines are upset at her husband. So in my mind is like, oh, did he play a prank? And then I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's so good. I never would have thought that. That is just so, that's so good.
And also it's like, this is one of those great stories because it is a confluence of like high definition cameras and whatever that like night vision technology is that makes it, because it's not like traditional green or whatever. It looks like this very ethereal, you know, blue, just, and it's so funny. Now when you look at it, you realize
it does look like you're seeing it through the sheets. I think there might be some of that. It looks like the sheets are
No, because you can see what it looks like is that the baby is like tucked in to this bunch of sheets, right?
Oh, and I see. What I was reading is sheets. I now see is the folds of the creases in the actual mattress.
So it was pulled off the corner. The baby had pulled the sheets off the corner, and that's what made it look like this baby face had been tucked in. But it's like it's just realistic enough to look like a baby, a ghost baby, had vaporized next to your child, when in reality, just that picture.
It looks like, for the audio listeners, almost like a Shroud of Turin baby on there. So picture that image just baked into the mattress on the camera. That's so good. That's so good. It also plays to, because you're right, Justin, there is sort of a technology aspect to it, the fact that it's the better cameras or whatever. But at the core of it, like so many other of these stories, it really relies on an information inefficiency. Maybe one of the parents who installed the mattress didn't tell the other, hey, by the way, this mattress has a picture of a baby with a creepy face on it. So what would have been obvious to one parent was horrific and strange to another one.
And that's got to be, and this is where we rely on your expertise as an actual parent here, Brian, but I would imagine that there's always some level of low-grade terror with kids, right, where there's a billion different spikes of adrenaline of like, oh, they're doing something they're not supposed to. They've been quiet for too long, yada, yada, yada. A billion of those, right?
Yep.
But rare are the sustained second level, like, oh, wait, no. Now I, not only do I not know whether or not they're in danger, now there's like this, even if it is just like an information inefficiency or something creepy that now just sustains it into this perpetual motion machine of insanity.
It is funny how much changes once you're on the other side of parenthood. I remember hearing an urban legend. Let's take it for granted that this totally happened and exactly as I heard it. But when I was in college, you know, you start to have those deep philosophical ideas of what happens after we die and reincarnation, is that real or whatever. And then somebody shares a story with like, oh, my cousins or whoever, my relatives have a 8-year-old and a just had a newborn, and they just set up a nanny cam. And that's of course another key ingredient of all these just so internet horror stories, is you have a new piece of technology. And they watched as the 8-year-old went into the baby's room and curled up next to the baby and whispered, tell me again about God. And there was something about like that story that is just like, oh my God, if reincarnation was real, maybe kids do have like some kind of weird ability to talk to younger people or whatever. But then you become a parent and you're like, yeah, man, kids say crazy shit all the time. I don't know. Like, you don't really worry about it.
Yeah. Once you see the full gigantic junk drawer of randomness that comes out of a child's mouth, you're less willing to be like, oh, but wait, these two paper clips are from the same manufacturer.
Yes. I remember. Yeah, man, there's a lot of junk in that drawer.
Yeah, we've been throwing stuff in there forever, for as long as it's existed.
I remember upstairs at my parents' house, my mom, and we were talking to my niece, who was like 6 or 7 years old.
And she mentioned, like, oh, yeah, my invisible friend. Like, oh, your invisible friend. She goes, yeah, she's right there, and points to a corner. Like, what does your friend look like? She's like, oh, you know, she's about this tall. And she starts to describe him. I'm looking at my mom. I'm like, I know this is just a kid making stuff up from a cartoon or something, but I'm freaking out right now because it's just the utter conviction, which, like, oh, she's got purple hair, she got this, and she's looking at me.
And well, like, and then, you know, they drop, like, those weird sideways details that mean nothing to a kid. They're just, you know, throwing paint at the wall, or they're Jackson Pollocking all over. But then they're like, sometimes there's fangs, and sometimes she whispers to me secrets. And it's like, just through the context of being an adult, all of that rings different.
Why? I was like, I'm asking her details. She's like, pink hair, purple. And I'm like, and what's her name? She goes, Pinky Doo. I'm like, I think that's a cartoon, you know? And I think she's just describing the last cartoon, which she was.
Did I ever tell you guys the story of the giant vermin rodent that was in our chimney? Did we talk about this?
No.
So this is back, 10, 11 years ago. We had a smaller place. We didn't need much because we only had the one kid, and then we had a second one, and eventually we bought the much bigger place. But there was something clearly living up in the chimney, because we would hear, like, ga-dong, ga-dong, ga-da-da-da-dong, dong-dong, from time to time. And there came this moment that it was just going nuts, and it was like, I forget what the in-the-moment impetus was, but there came this moment that it was like, I'm going to open this freaking flu, and we're just gonna have it out, me and whatever this thing is, because I want to be able to start fires in there. And so we hear the da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's like, I don't know, I'm picturing maybe a raccoon. That seems fairly obvious.
Dick Van Dyke.
Squirrel would be weird.
Yeah, no, an ashen Dick Van Dyke falls down and starts serenading you with cockney
in a bad English accent. But we finally, like, we get to the point where we all know that this is a charged moment, and we're going to do this for reals. So I have one hand on the flu. I have, like, some kind of cudgel in my hand. Bonnie's got a broom or whatever. And then I just swoop open the flu and then back away, and then I sort of jiggle the flu left, right, and then arms up, and all of a sudden I hear as loud as it has ever been. Like, this thing is coming down, and we're about to have a showdown. And it was a lizard about about 4 inches long, and it just landed comically on the top of the fake ceramic log in the fireplace, and just stared directly at us with the most embarrassed look. I didn't know lizards could do embarrassment, but he was just like,
spoke in a British accent, I'm gonna save you insurance.
It might as well have been. So we told this story to Penny, who was 2 or 3. She started talking pretty young, and so she loved it so much that she decided that was her imaginary friend. And whenever anything went bad, I went to the bathroom once, everything was covered with wet toilet paper. The kind of thing that a kid would do, you take the toilet paper, you soak it in the sink, and you slap it against the wall, and it sticks, and that's delightful. So you keep doing that. And then I open the door, and there's my 3-year-old daughter going, lizard, ah, lizard, ah, you just missed him, lizard.
I once had to use the restroom late one night. I got up, and you ever have that sort of that foggy state where you're nothing will really startle you because you're still half asleep. You know, your reactions are slow, whatever, and so you're not full. You're just like, I get up, I go walk into the bathroom, and I'm standing over the toilet midstream, and I feel something touch my shoulder. Just touch, all of a sudden something's on my shoulder. Something's on my shoulder, but I'm still too groggy to, like, react. I'm like, huh? I look over, and there was a lizard had jumped from wherever onto my shoulder. And I remember looking at the lizard, and it looks at me, and he's like, I'm not, he's like, bad plan. And then he just jumps away. And I, did I scare him? I don't know, but it was I was glad that I was half asleep, because otherwise it would have been very messy. But it was just very, like, wow, lizard, you know, and then, hey, human. All right, bye. Never happened again.
And well, I'll tell you what should happen immediately, and that's your support of us at patreon.com/weirdthings. Of course, patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can support this show. Keep us coming back every single Monday to make sure that you get what you crave. Yup, weird news dissected by your three favorite friends. Head on over there right now, patreon.com/weirdthings.
You know, some of the folks out there might be wondering, like, okay, look, I get that you guys divvy up the cash and that it you know, you spend it on daily expenditures, but specifically, where does that money go? I'm happy to report that we are keeping it, we are paying it forward, we're keeping it weird, because I finally, after a month of this thing being on my lawn, got Bonnie to confess to me how much money she spent on this fog, smoke, breathing, animatronic, red-eyed dragon that is in our front yard. We spent an entire month's worth of Weird Things episodes. So
Oh my God.
I spent 8 hours, 9, 10 hours, and all that money went to this awesome dragon. And now, once we have it, I mean, it is legitimately the dopest dragon in all of our neighborhood.
Yeah, get wrecked, other dragons. You suck.
But here's the funny part. They took the other decorations, because it's Halloween. They had like a skeleton or whatever. So under the half-raised foot, they put skeleton bones, so it looks like it's in the middle of crushing a skeleton or whatever. And what people in the neighborhood, I don't think, realize is our appetite to keep this thing around. So next month, it's going to be like, it's going to have a pumpkin and a cornucopia. And then it's going to have a Santa hat. Then it's going to be baby New Year dragon. And I'm just waiting for the neighborhood to figure out that we will never not have this smoke-breathing dragon on our front lawn.
I mean, all right. So here's how it goes. You know, pilgrim dragon. You got Santa dragon. Baby New Year
dragon.
Valentine's dragon, Cupid dragon, and then really you start running out of costumes.
Oh, no. Irish dragon.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. So, yeah, March is St. Patrick's Day. So now you have
and then April is...
Rasta dragon.
No. And on the third day, he rose dragon.
Oh, I mean, like, if you're not getting letters from the homeowners association because you continually have a smoke breathing dragon on your front lawn, then you will almost certainly get it if you either go, now the dragon smokes weed for 420, or now the dragon is Jesus. Like, that's definitely where you're going to start.
You think
getting.
That's so if you're placing Vegas odds, then sometime before mid-April is when they finally come to us and be like, all right.
But then the other side is that you can go, like, if they're like, just get this Jesus dragon off the lawn, like, that's disrespectful. Be like, all right, 420 dragon, like, or the opposite one.
Oh, actually, that would be great with the smoke machine.
Till 4th of July, and then you make it the patriotic dragon. Like, oh, you want me to take down my patriotic dragon who's welcoming home the troops?
Yeah, exactly. This dragon doesn't kneel.
Oh, dude. Okay, now I'm going to say that the Homeowners Association has a good position up until the end of April. Because in April, they're like, all right, what are you going to do? And then they go to take it down, and it's May. And what do we have? It says, honor our veterans. And then what are you going to take down? The honor our veterans dragon? Yep. Where he's very respectfully kneeling.
Big yellow ribbon around the dragon.
This thing's going to be around forever.
I was trying to remember, was it the Green Dragon Tavern? Was that where they did like some planning of the American Revolution? Boston Tea Party. That's where they planned it. So yeah, so there's a history there. Oh, it's not of the Green Dragon. Pub,
yeah, it's
guys.
A purple dragon. I don't want to.
You're colorblind, Brian. How dare they pick upon you for that? I hate your neighborhood already, man. It's just these people.
It's funny, too, because like I didn't know how much Bonnie had spent on it. And just one day, and in fact, the question never even occurred to me until I was like, man, I love that dragon. It looks so awesome in the front yard. And she was like, yeah, and I love that it moves and talks and screams. I'm like, what? And then she like pulls back an ear and twists three knobs or whatever and hits a button. Suddenly it's moving. And then that's when, that's the first time that I'm like, how much did this cost?
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, is that like an impulse purchase at Costco, or did she have to call like Smoking Dragons or Us?
So I got the full story. She finally confessed. Apparently, it was almost an impulse purchase last year, and then she missed her window, and she had a year's worth of regret, and then finally went back and asked like at Home Depot or whatever, like, hey, man, where's that dragon? And they're like, yeah, we don't have it anymore. They're all gone. They don't make it anymore. She's like, what? And then she went and just, you know, to the internet. Like now the FOMO had gotten so great that she just needed to go get it.
You yeah, past the Rubicon of like now you're looking up like, you know, collector resellers of, you know, I'm looking for a cherry, 2012 Smoking Dragon with skeleton.
It has like a pipe that goes in its umbilicus, like in a belly, so that the smoke will come out the mouth. It's so dumb. It's going to be great.
I knew a guy who moved into a neighborhood, and the kind of the resident neighborhood, really, really fancy neighborhood in Virginia, and sort of the resident bully there was some attorney who made his money off of, like, you know, airplane crashes or something.
Yeah, and that attorney he was the mayor of New York at the time, and now he's attorney to the president, all right? You know?
Well, this guy would file lawsuits and stuff, was sort of harassed other people. Oh, your lawn's this or whatever. He was just notorious for doing this. So the guy I knew moved in there, decided to annoy him. So he bought a full-sized X-Wing and put it in his front yard. So attorney guy, he was wealthy, is like, well, mister, you don't understand how things work around here. I'm going to sue you. Discovers new guy is a billionaire who is like, I can afford all the attorneys I want. I'm keeping the X-Wing in my front yard. And it was just a sort of back and forth, kind of a silly civil dispute.
I think this might have been a Weird Things topic from like 8 years ago. But wasn't there a neighbor that spent like $10,000 on a statue that was just a giant middle finger pointing to their other neighbor?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that was Al. What's his face? The Screw magazine. Yeah. He had it on the Intercoastal
Goldstein or something. Yeah.
Yeah. A South Florida legend, but on the Intercoastal of Fort Lauderdale, where you have many famous like yachts are docked there, and you have a lot of people with these, you know, big, gigantic, beautiful mansions. And he was disliked by them, so he got a gigantic middle finger to point out to the most famous homes, the most famous expensive homes in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Florida.
Hey, you know what else is another crazy place? Is New Zealand.
Oh man, yeah, it's a wild place.
New Zealand's crazy, Australia's crazy, all those places are like really, really crazy. And
is this our new segment where we just bag on other countries?
Yeah. And there we go. Moving on. Nailed them.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much it. Moving on. Well, okay, one more thing. According to somebody did some document releases with the Australian government, actually. And so, you know, going down to Australia now and found out that there have been some sightings, a number of sightings reports of the Tasmanian tiger.
What
is the Tasmanian tiger?
The Tasmanian tiger, guys?
Yeah. I mean, of course, obviously the Tasmanian devil. Something well-known and popularized and parodied in cartoon. But a Tasmanian tiger, well, I would have no idea other than a tiger that is in the region of Tasmania.
Well, it's basically, I think, where we get the idea of it's the extinct animal, the marsupial-looking wolf creature that went extinct about 100 years ago.
Whoa.
God.
We're looking at a photo of what some might call bad taxidermy, but I assume is instead an actual Tasmanian tiger.
So yeah, it looks probably about, you know, you would say coming up to maybe your shin or knee, right? Like at least in this picture, it looks like it compared to the leaves around it. Sharp teeth, a beady if slightly slanted eyes and short ears. Like it definitely looks horrifying.
Look, it's not for me to solve these mysteries and declare that I now know what's up, but I believe I'm the only one on this panel who has seen Sneakers as soon as he gets back from the groomers. I just want to put that out there for anybody who's familiar with my little rat dog. I mean, that
looks like Sneakers. That looks like Sneakers when he hasn't seen me in a few days and he doesn't like me.
So, all right. So this thing has been extinct since 1936.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the news peg? Somebody saw one recently?
Well, it's one of the largest, last large mammals to go extinct. Okay. When, if you look at the extinction, talk about like there are subspecies that can go extinct that we have things like that. But when you talk about large animals that have gone extinct, talk about like the dodo bird, and then the thylacine, the Tasmanian tiger, is one of the large mammals distantly related to the Tasmanian devil, you know, but it's this own creature. And so that's one of, you talk about things going extinct, this is one of the things that comes up, is that, you know, humans had a very, you know, significant part in eradicating this. And so the last one died in like a zoo or something like that. And there's this creepy black and white footage of the thing walking around doing circles and stuff. But it's been, ever since it's gone extinct, though, there have been sightings. People say, no, we think we've seen it in these, you know, different accounts of it. And so, you know, this was sort of interesting that somebody pulled up, said, yeah, here's a lot of recent sightings where people think they've seen this somewhere in the Australian outback. And I think maybe in Tasmania, too. So anyhow, it's just a very, very interesting, you know, story, because it's like, is it still around? You know, it's,
here's my question. Let's say we find one. Is the move to try and find another one and breed it, or you know, to bring it back to a non-extinction level, if we, you know, or is it just like leave them be how they are? If we thought that they were, I mean, whatever they're doing, I guess they're still around damn near 100 years after we thought that they had gone extinct.
It's a good question. So the challenge is that other species you can bring back because you can find related species that are close to them. You would need to have multiples of these in order to do that, because it's not like when your closest thing is dramatically different, like a Tasmanian devil. I don't think there's any chance of using, you know, any sort of crossbreeding there. And again, these are marsupial. And so by marsupial, I mean, they've got pouches, you know, they're a very distant, you know, these are not in the dog. You look at it, you think it's a dog, completely unrelated. You and I are closer related to dogs than this thing is. Yeah. You know, that's the spooky thing about, like, you know, the Tasmanian the marsupial creatures, is that they follow often, they have what's called, you know, convergent evolution or convergent, where they look very similar to other things, look very, very similar to something else we've seen, but are completely unrelated. And there are older species of this, very much extinct, that look more like bigger tigers, bigger cats. They're marsupial cats. That if you just saw the bones, and I've brought this example up before, where I've actually shown the bones of this next to the bones of like a timber wolf, and you would think they were related, but, you know, we are more closely related to that timber wolf than they are to each other. It's just this weird, you know, quirk of evolution, similar ecosystems, things filling the niches the same.
Well, and it really does indicate that there is certain niches that need to be filled, and things will evolve to, you know, figure out their best analog for, mm-hmm. And we've talked about this here in the United States or North America. We used to have a lot of megafauna, but then we hunted the mammoths to extinction. And so as a result, we lack that analog of you know, wild elephants that they have in sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of that, you know, it's we try to figure out when and why that happened. And, you know, you had climatic change that affected that. And you look at, like, you know, cave bears and other stuff that were just, you know, short-faced bears, all these other things that were just super, super common that aren't there anymore. And it's interesting to think about, like, you know, even in ecosystems that remained relatively the same, those creatures are no longer there. And, you know, sometimes it's neat to sort of imagine what would that have been like. So Anyhow, hey, kind of neat, you know.
I got a weird question. This is a speculative jam, and maybe this won't go anywhere. But it's like, in general, it seems like we all lament the loss of biodiversity, even though there have been entire, you know, eras that have come and gone, and, you know, 99.999% of all species that have ever existed are already extinct or whatever. We don't want to see more go extinct nowadays. And usually that is expressed in forms of conservation, of whatever we have, let's keep what we have. Why is it, do you think, that so few voices are calling for massive mutations to create more biodiversity? Outside of the fact that we might create something that'll wipe us out.
Well, you walk into Chipotle and they say no MGMO, you know, no GMO rather, no GMO, and they're proud about it. We have a very, very anti-GMO attitude, and I think for the wrong reasons, and it's frustrating. So I think that's the start, is that that's part of it.
Yeah, and there is, you know, at the heart of a lot of conservation kind of stuff is the idea that we are not here to play God, right? That we are living in an ecosystem that we need to respect, and that we cannot, the further we seek to control it, the worse off we will be, because there is a harmonious natural order to things. And whether or not you think that that is ridiculous or not, it is beyond argument that that is a part of how we think about it. And so, like, why do we not look to play? Why do we say, hey, let's keep things the way they are, as opposed to, hey, wouldn't it be better if dogs could jump 5 feet in the air? Because we are afraid. We are afraid that this is, the more we make the world in our own image, the more we will screw it up, and we will give up the tremendous gift that is, you know, a nature's setting for us.
Yeah, and there certainly, I think, is very good precedent and reason for us to be cautious about all of it. I just wonder where that comes from, because meanwhile, like, various holy books, like the Old Testament, very clearly says, mankind has dominion over the animals, go nuts, do whatever you want. So it's not from a religious standpoint, but it does seem to be with an almost religious respect that universally people aren't interested in, or are afraid of you know, Frankensteining something.
I also tend to think that our desire to keep everything naturally the way it was tends to correlate with our ability to feed ourselves and shelter ourselves. When we're good at those things, we tend to be like, hey, you want to know what? Rivers should be good too. And also these mountains, and also this golfer that I'd never heard of before, but sure, I'll pay you 50.
That's a really good point, because right now we're all fat and happy. And now we're at the point where, like, what, just a week or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, like, should we really even break any rocks on Mars? Because it seems like it's in whatever its natural state is now. And
not the sentiment I was. There was some more nuance.
Sorry. I didn't mean that as any kind of personal dig. But
May metaphors in there as well.
My only point is, man, oh man, does all of that change once your children have gone 40 hours without a single bit of food? Like, all of a sudden it's like, I will blow up Mars right now with these fists.
Yeah, for sure. And like, and the thing too that happens is that you, as you become more affluent, you know, you might express more progressive ideals and you might broadcast them more, but when it comes to your own area, your own thing around you, you become extremely, like, you live in a very, your neighborhood's nice, right? Now, there's a lot of land behind your house, Brian. Do you want to see housing developments there? Of course not, you know, because that would suck. You know, and you take places like San Francisco that, you know, become more and more affluent. They don't want to change. They don't want to build new houses. They don't want to do this. They don't want to change the thing they think they like. And I think that comes to, like, I don't want to change these carrots. These carrots are great. I don't want to change these other things. They're working fine for me. And so when things are working for you, you really are resistant to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like there certainly have been, I think part of the reason why we have a conservation mindset ecologically is because we did see good things come out of, you know, clean water acts and stuff like that. In fact, I still remember to this day, it was a conversation I had with Andrew at an Outback Steakhouse one day, where I was watching, like, Mad Men. In Mad Men, There was no moment of like, it's the 60s that ever really freaked me out until one scene. None of the social attitudes or the smoking indoors, but they went to go on a picnic and then they literally were just done with the picnic and they just flipped the blanket, threw all the crap that was on the blanket just in the grass and left.
Oh my God. That is so offensive just to even hear it described.
I was like, what the, like, all right, a little on the nose. And then I was talking to Andrew and Andrew's like, actually, no, like really there was like an element of like public litter laws that became more of a thing and a beautified. Yes, this is the sea. They just flipped the blanket and they just hit the road.
It almost looks like a gif of like someone messing up, like you would see nowadays. Like, oh, she forgot to clear the blanket before she upturned
but
it.
No, she's just piecing the heck out.
And
there was a drastic change in our particular national parks and stuff, and with the conservation laws and litter laws, because these things started to accumulate. They started to do this, and partially because, you know, when you moved from paper-based stuff to plastics and you know, aluminum stuff like this, these things in three rain showers don't go away. And also the cost of human labor was that, you know, we stopped having as many people attendants in places to pick other people's garbage up. And they're like, wow, we got to, you know, even the fake Indian was crying. So, you know, we got to do something about this. That was a commercial, guys, by the way, with like the guy who was.
Yeah, no. Actually, famous, also, famous and, to be fair, Andrew truly believes there never was Indians. He thinks it's a hoax. We've never talked about it here.
Oh, Andrew does not believe that.
just looking for spice, man.
Yeah, no, there was this famous, so I don't know if some of our younger listeners may not know, but there was this famous commercial about this Indian, this Indian who's watching people litter, and apparently he turned out to be like an Italian-American actor who'd play Native Americans, which is like kind of another travesty.
single tear rolling down the Indian's cheek.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm absolutely right about that and not disparage somebody who may have been an actual Native American actor. Yeah, Iron Eyes Cody. Yeah, he's Sicilian.
So as we ease our way into picks, it brings up an interesting thought, and I do not mean to start a thing or whatever, but I was reading the Madness of Crowds recently, and they talk about just the different social groups that seem to form and which social groups have beef with other social groups. I think we talked a little bit about this on the show. I didn't know that apparently there's a rift between hardcore feminists and trans people. At the core of it, and this is overly reductionist for me to say, but it's like feminists basically boils down to, man, we've been spending centuries trying to, you know, not become a cartoon of a pinup doll and to be accepted whatever shape we're in and not be objectified. And now, again, not my words, but a reductionist version of their argument, now a bunch of dudes are coming in and explaining to us how to be women. Like, I didn't know about those riffs, but in all of that, he... doggone it. I had a reason I was teeing this up. And what were we talking about just before this?
Oh, Jesus, Brian.
No. Hold on. I'm going to land this.
We were talking about litter and Indian, the crying Indian.
God damn. Oh, yes. Okay. This is okay. Good. I am going to land this. In a world where, biologically speaking, there is some level of difference between males and females down to a genetic level in most cases. But there is not that big a difference between people of various races. And so the question brought up is, why are we so allergic? Why do we instantly reject the idea? Who was it, the president of the NAACP that says, I identify as
Dolezal. I think it was a local
NAACP.
Yeah.
Not even president, just
right,
the
right.
Organizer.
But that was universal, that nobody had any tolerance for that idea that you could identify as a race other than the race you were born. But we do have an appetite for being kind to somebody who identifies as a different gender than what they're born. I found that fascinating because one of them, by the numbers, seems like it should be less of a hurdle to jump than the other. I'm going to guess that nobody wants to chime in and have a hot take on it, but it was an interesting question that this book brought up.
I will only say this and get myself into trouble here. When we talk about genetic differences, often we say that there's more similarities. The problem is that in certain things, yes, but the small areas where there are a lot of differences, you know, like the we'll say the in-group differences are greater than the difference between that group and another group. It's all where the gene is. You know, we share 40% of our DNA with a carrot. You know, and so, and my point is, it's like, yes, we can say overall percentage wise it's the same, but it's like, but these little areas, it's different. And that's where it gets complex. And I'm abstaining. Abstain button.
That's fine. Nobody needs to engage. I will just give a soft reminder that that book, man, raised some questions that I didn't even know were questions. and it left me that's crazy.
I read Watchmen, the book. Over the weekend, man, do I love Watchmen, the book. Oh, classic. I remember reading it when I was younger. Loved it. Reread it a bunch of times. Each time I discovered new nuances. I'll have to say that this is definitely a moment of maturity for me, as this time I definitely got to about halfway through binging it, where I was reading all of the articles that they have in between each issue, as opposed to just skipping through to get back to the fun picture boxes. Man, if you ain't never read Watchmen, the book, then go ahead and read Watchmen, the book.
Check it out. Bryce?
I got a weird pick. So over the week, last Friday or so, there's a new game that came out, and I there are not too many games where I run out and end up getting something day one. In fact, I didn't even intend to. I saw someone write a review about it, and that got me thinking about it, and then I went and did it, which is just called Peer Pressure, actually. I've been trying to stay active, stay fit a little bit, use the gym in my apartment, go walking a little more, and they got this new game out for the Nintendo Switch. Ring Fit Adventure. And so it comes with this resistance ring that you plug one of the controllers into. And so you squeeze it and you can stretch it and move it about. And you also strap another controller to your thigh. And so it's an RPG where to do attacks, you do exercises. So you can do like a squats attack and you do like 20 reps of squats. Or you do, knee to chest. So you sit the controller down and you get on your back and you do the actual move. It's really well polished. It's by Nintendo. So it has a lot of polish. There's even a little bit of a story where you're trying to save the world from this really buff dragon.
is it located in my neighborhood?
No, maybe. He's wearing a singlet. Oh, you can put a singlet on your dragon. Exercise.
A dragon on a yoga ball.
And but along the way, it'll keep track of how much you run in place or jog in place. Even the sensor on the on one of the Switch controllers, you can actually put your thumb over it and it'll take your heart rate. So when you finish up an exercise, you sit it there and it says, oh, you did this. I think it's really interesting, and I'm on day three of finding time to do it. I think today was the longest.
Are you ready to show us those abs?
No.
Okay.
But even like onboarding and stuff is really, really nice. So it's like, what's your age? What's your weight? And it doesn't do the thing that Wii Fit. Did you ever try the Wii Fit?
No.
Wii Fit, it would like take your height and weight, and it would like very like on the screen, it would like give you the sliding scale of where your BMI was. Mm-hmm. And so if you were like maybe overweight or further, it would be this weird like kind of like, look at you.
This is how you look.
Where this is just like, here's a proprietary difficulty number based on how much you exercise, how difficult you want this to be, and you can adjust it. It walks you through stretches and cooldowns. It adjusts the cooldowns based on the things that you actually do in a day. So like one day I ended up doing a lot of arm stuff, and so it was all arm stretches. It's a really neat thing. I think not a lot of people will be into it, just fundamentally because it's like a sports fitness thing. But I'm certainly getting 20 more minutes of exercise a day than I normally do.
As we get generation after generation of these kind of games, I'm actually really dialed in less on the technological, you know, each one will have its own Jeep job that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really interested in the evolution of the behavioral economics side of things, of figuring out what nudges, because right now we have no shortage of apps that'll yell at us to get up and move around.
Right.
And I think it's pretty clear that that ain't working, you know, like, but there's some level of it of, you know, getting puzzle unlocks and stuff that can make the game fun enough and the story good enough.
And they really do make it. I mean, it really is a turn-based RPG, right? Like, you don't get too far in before you get this ability where it's like, okay, now the color of the exercise that you do, which is based on the muscle group, is like effective against certain colors of enemies. So if you have a red enemy, then, oh, you should do these. You should do an arm move against it. You have some moves that like, okay, this one's weaker, but it hits four enemies at once instead of just one. It's really cool, and it seems like it kind of has a lot there in terms of making it this video game sort of adventure, right? You're collecting coins, and you're getting workout gear. Workout gear is like your armor, so you get stat boosts and levels.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You drink smoothies to restore your health and to give you buffs and stuff. It's a really neat thing. And
do they have power-ups that look suspiciously like speedballs? Like, all of a sudden, like, it's super effective. You're crushing it. Vitamin S, it works.
it's called Ring Fit Adventure. It's on the Nintendo Switch. I think it's really cool. I don't know. It doesn't connect to like the Apple Health thing, so I have to manually enter it in. But you know, just it's a part of a thing, part of a whole thing. So, yeah,
exciting. I'm looking forward to like a augmented reality, and I've talked about this before, like Nintendo making games and stuff for that. And I think, you know, play Mario in your living room, full body, whatever. All this could be really cool. Mm-hmm. My pick is the movie I saw last night, Zombieland 2, Double Tap.
Really?
It looked fun. I mean, it looked like it knew exactly what it was trying to be from the trailer.
And it was. It was just a delightful, fun movie. It's neat to see, you know, particularly with Harrelson, Stone, and Eisenberg, whereas actors, they've been at it for, you know, so long now that watching them now, like, what, over 10 years later, you know, take on these roles and play them again and is even greater actors than they were before. And just a fun, fun movie. Really enjoyed it. So that was my pick, is Zombieland 2.
It is kind of amazing that you know, that cast, obviously insane and now even, you know, more impressive than it was when the first movie came out. But such a property that I think when it came out, you're like, oh, wow, they're definitely going to do another sequel and it's going to be a thing. And it's odd that it took such a circuitous route to a sequel.
Yeah, I have no idea what went on behind the scenes or what happened there, but I'm glad they did. And it's fun. It's a delight. And it's kind of neat to sort of pick up years later. And also kind of the conceit, too, is that when that first movie came out, you know, the world was different than what everybody is using flip phones and stuff like that. And so it's kind of funny that they have to sort of go with that idea that this is a world where, you know, our last president, you know, was, you know, in the middle, this happened in the middle of like Obama's camp, you know, administration, that there was no smartphone culture or apps or stuff like this. And so they're nostalgic for a world that, you know, isn't like our own, which is kind of neat in a subtle way, but, you know, so dig it. That's my pick.
That's cool. Nice.
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.